Hello, and welcome to Expected Value, the podcast that goes inside the sports analytics world. I'm Paul Carr from True Media. This is episode 71, so if you're looking for standout players who wore that number, you're probably finding NFL offensive linemen. Your Trent Williams, Jason Peters, Walter Jones, Alex Karras, if you want to go back into the 60s. Offensive linemen typically do the quiet, unseen work on a team, much like today's guest, Allison Laux, Director of Business Development and Innovation at ESPN. Allison was indirectly responsible for my 10 years at ESPN because when she left ESPN's research department in 2008, I was hired to backfill her spot. So I literally took her desk in the research room. So thank you, Allison, for that. And I'm sure we'll touch on that a little bit. Allison is now closing in on two decades at ESPN. She's risen from a researcher job to her current role as Director of Business Development and Innovation, which means one of her main responsibilities is overseeing ESPN's analytics team. If you watch ESPN at all, you see metrics their team has created, from total QBR, which is a much better way to measure quarterback play than passer rating, to all the power indices used for projecting football, basketball, soccer, to newer metrics like pass rush win rate and receiver tracking metrics. In this conversation, Allison and I will talk about all those metrics, how they're created from conception to execution on TV. We'll go over what she does as director of that group and what a typical day looks like, the challenges of using complex metrics in simple ways on TV, how the rise of sports betting has affected what her team does, the most common public misconception about ESPN's metrics, and what's coming down the pike for ESPN's analytics. We'll also talk through her ESPN career, the different steps that she took, what she looks for when hiring someone in the analytics group, how her journalism background helps in her current role, and she's got a great ESPN story about meeting one of her sports heroes. Then, producer Blake Arney will join me to react and wrap things up. Without further ado, here's the Expected Value conversation with ESPN's Allison Laux. We're joined now on Expected Value by Allison Laux, Director of Business Development and Innovation at ESPN. Allison, welcome to the show. Your job title doesn't necessarily sound analytics-ish, but I know you oversee the ESPN analytics team. So at the high level, what do you and that group do at ESPN?
What would you say you do here?
So
ESPN analytics is my primary area of oversight. We have a team, there's just 10 of us total, but we provide all of the predictive and performance metrics, on-field metrics, for a number of sports that, you know, are used across all of ESPN's platforms, starting to, you know, drive just more smart storytelling. That's what my main day-to-day is oversight of that team. And then in addition to that, working with the broader business development and innovation team, working with various partners, vendors. I mean, ultimately what my role is trying to get, connect kind of our world-class data and analytics that ESPN has with fans in meaningful and impactful ways.
So you have all these metrics and you got to figure out, how do we make them accessible? Where can people see them? All that kind of thing.
Yes, 100%. And with a large entity such as ESPN, it's not as easy as you may think.
So what's I know there are kind of no typical days often at ESPN, but what does as typical a day as possible kind of look like for you?
Well, it's a lot of, I'm essentially like a go-between. So I am not an analytics person by trade. Like I don't code, I don't model, I don't have a background in that. So I am very much a go-between between our team and kind of the rest of the company in figuring out how we turn, you know, what metrics we decide to build, how we decide to manage them, and then how do we turn them into storytelling, compelling tools and devices for the rest of the company to use. So my day is a lot of meetings with folks on the team, just getting up to speed on where we're at with certain projects and coming up with roadmaps and so forth. And then meeting with folks just across the enterprise, trying to think of examples. You know, I just had, just got off a call with our PR team and, you know, loving to keep them abreast of the work that our team has coming out that they could help us potentially publicize. And so forth. And then we talked about Sloan as well, the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference, which is in early March, but I'm coordinating ESPN's role at that conference in helping helping secure talent and ESPN personnel to be on panels there. So
we'll get into the TV side a little bit more, but first, what other opportunities are there, like, for your group, for the analytics team, kind of beyond what we see that's front-facing, what the public sees from a TV or digital standpoint? What's there behind the scenes that you guys can impact to the company?
Most of what we do is forward-facing, and, you know, we've put an emphasis, especially in the last year or so, to have everything branded with ESPN Analytics, so it's clear that it is coming from our team, because there, you know, there is a lot of noise and so forth out there. We do a few things internally, some like very little on side in the business analytics. You know, we've done some like ratings projections, so forth, to help our programming and marketing teams with game selection. You know, most of what we have is forward facing, appearing either on, you know, ESPN linear, digital, social, and then we also have kind of our own little boutique website that we've pumped some of our cool stuff out to, that, you know, ESPNanalytics.com. If fans want to check in and see what's going on there.
So those metrics, that's obviously what your group's known for. Can you take us through the typical life cycle of a metric, meaning from, you know, idea or conception, or someone comes to you with a premise, to the final product? Kind of what, I know it can be, you know, months or years of a process, but kind of what that roughly looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. And I can use, I'll use our receiver tracking metrics as a good example. We actually did a whole panel last year at Sloan about this, myself and Brian Burke and Seth Walder. But Brian Burke, who folks may know, is kind of like the godfather of football analytics. He is, you know, he's one of my data scientists, and he's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And 2017, we started to get access to the NFL Next Gen Stats. And Brian, this, you know, was like a kid in a candy shop with access to all this data and all these different ideas and so forth. And the first one he did out of the gate was the pass block, pass rush win rate. And that, you know, was really worked out well in terms of adoption. It was really easy to understand and so forth. And kind of, you know, going position by position and figuring out how we could use use Next Gen Stats to tell a story about the, you know, player performance. So about, this had to be 2-ish years ago, but, you know, Brian's like, all right, like I'm ready. I want to do a receiver metric. It's like, mm-hmm. All right. So, you know, he can obviously speak more about this than I can, but there's a lot of iteration in the get-go. You know, he goes in, he's watching film, he's watching the data. He consults with folks like, you know, former players, experts in the business. I know Dominique Foxworth has been a resource for Brian over the years to really help dig in on like the football strategy side of things, you know, because Brian doesn't necessarily have that perspective, which he's picked up over the years, but certainly helped him to get that. But what, you know, kind of once he builds out the model and gets through that part, then that's where like Seth Walder and myself and others on the team come in and figure out like, okay, like what, how do we want to use this in a storytelling? Like, how can we make this something that's translatable, understandable for fans that can be, you know, talked about on NFL Live, it can be displayed on digital and so forth. So for the receiver tracking metrics, we came, it has three elements to it. Basically boils down to your ability to get open, your ability to make the catch, and your ability to gain yards after the catch. And then those three are rolled up, and then there's one just like overall receiver tracking metric number. We did everything on a 0 to 100 scale, again, similar to our total QBR, just to mm-hmm. make it a lot easier for folks to digest. And then like once kind of we're ready to, when it's ready for big time, we'll push it out. We'll get it to just different folks. You know, usually do like a, call like a soft launch with some of the experts in our stats and information group and some of our other NFL experts, just to, you know, have them digest it and, you know, give us feedback, give us their thoughts. And then once, you know, and plus and that helps get buy-in too, because then they feel like they're a little more invested in it. They know it's coming. And then once that happens, we kind of do a big blast of, all right, this is out. This particular metric, we had partnered with 538 Sports to do a, you know, forward-facing page that fans could come and look and see where all their favorite receivers stacked up. So we had that presence. Unfortunately, that page went away when 538 Sports went away. Right. But we recreated it, and it's now available on ESPNanalytics.com if anybody wants to check out this past season's results. But that's, I mean, that's kind of like the cycle of it. And then we'll just, oftentimes we'll do like education tours and, you know, help folks kind of utilize it for the first time. And then really you just kind of, it goes through the cycle and it just becomes part of the kind of the storytelling rhetoric, just like some of the other metrics have.
Right.
And we don't need to push it anymore. It's just, it's there and people ask for it and go get it.
Part of the toolbox. Yeah. What kind of obstacles do you run into, or maybe what's the pushback that you get along the way that you kind of have to work through, whether it's from people, whether it's more on the data side? What are the challenges, the biggest challenges in that process?
I mean, the biggest challenges are certainly just on the time and the resources side. I mean, we don't have a massive team. So we will, when we do these projects, it's, you know, it's Brian doing a lot of stuff on his own. So really being able to, you know, have the time to walk through like the metrics and the methodology and so forth, and then the results as well, and feeling really good about those. And that's the biggest, I don't say not necessarily concern, but that's the biggest, you know, function.
In terms of you got to deal with. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the nature of the beast. The pushback internally is not nearly what it used to be. I mean, when I think back to when we did Total QBR, which came out in 2011, I mean, yeah, Paul, you were here. There was a lot of like animosity and like vitriol, like this whole idea of analytics. what is this? And like, we have passer rating. Why do we need this? And it just, you know, I give a lot of credit to my predecessors, you know, Jeff Bennett and Dean Oliver and your Albert and Alok, and you know, just how they had to just kind of push through that and just really be sound about the methodology, sound about the data, just feel good about that and just be able to essentially to back it up. And it's funny when we look back on that, you know, now coming up on 13 years ago, that I know it's amazing. 13 years ago, like to think where we are now is insane. Like we have fourth down bug, ESPN Analytics fourth down bug on Monday Night Football. Like we never in a million years would have ever imagined that back in 2011. Yeah. But
QBR,
you know,
got mentioned in a commercial for crying out loud.
Yes, it did. Yes, the Coca-Cola commercial, which I had to listen to like three times before I actually caught it, but
it's in there.
It's all right. We're mainstream now.
That's right.
There's certainly still pushback. Like anytime somebody sees something that they don't like, you know, those, you know, kind of the analytics boogeyman. But in general, like we are very well integrated into kind of ESPN's content on a daily basis, especially in the NFL.
Beyond the, I don't know, just general pushback, obstacles, things you have to work through that are normal part of the process. What challenges are there specific to TV that make getting these metrics across in clear ways challenging at times?
When we go through the I mentioned when we went through the RTMs process, is you have to figure out a way to make it so it's explainable. And that is with TV, you know, certainly we have the shortest time span, like really want to hammer home the point without making it too complicated. So things that, you know, are generally easier for folks to digest, keeping things on a 0 to 100 scale, percentages help, you know, the things that we've had the biggest reach, you know, bang for our buck, certainly has been like projections, chance to win tonight's game, chance to win the Super Bowl, all that, you know, those are just very simple percentages. So that, keeping it simple from that perspective is big. Like, we have had success certainly out with some of like the NFL Next Gen stats, some more of the complicated behind the scenes metrics, but just as long as the display is easy and clean to understand, essentially, like, we have to do things that don't require a lot of explanation by the talent, because you don't necessarily, you know, you can't necessarily count on a SportsCenter anchor who's not fully, you know, fully informed on what goes into all of these metrics to have to explain what they're talking about. So,
And you mentioned, you know, the score bug, or not the score bug, but the go for it bug on Monday night. That's up there for what, 5 seconds? Like, it's got to be, it doesn't get into the weeds of the percentage and everything. It's like, should you go or not? Because that's really what you're trying to get to.
Yes. And, you know, it took a long time to kind of get to that and figuring out what the sweet spot is in terms of what you display. Because we certainly want to have a display up there that can be passive, or, you know, oftentimes Monday Night Football was pretty good. Like, Joe and Troy would speak to the situation. Lots of times, and, you know, we have it for college too, and it pops up there, doesn't get mentioned, and it just kind of goes away. So it's got to be something that's understandable. But then there's also the speed of the data, because, you know, with football, with a live play-by-play feed, it takes a little while to catch up. So you don't necessarily know whether, you know, until like the last second, if it's a fourth and one or a fourth and two or a fourth and eight, whatever it might be. So waiting, you know, can't wait for that ball spot. So we have to have something that is able to project, you know, to give a recommendation in advance.
You're also involved in the alternate telecasts for things, you know, BCS title game, CFP title game, or whatever acronym we have now, where you have, you know, a whole channel of, you know, analytics, betting, whatever it might be. What sort of prep do you do for that? Because obviously it's a very different thing where you have a lot of time and real estate to deal with. What sort of prep are you and others doing for those alternate telecasts from the analytics standpoint?
So the last couple of years, we've actually kind of moved away from doing at least the analytics specific altcast for the championship games, just because it is being in, like, analytics content is being better integrated into just the general broadcasts. So it hasn't been as necessary to have a one-off. That said, with this, you know, with the rise of ESPN Plus and streaming, and, you know, just rise of altcasts in general, we are very much working to figure out ways to have to do more in the altcast space. Not, you know, I don't want to say similar to what Amazon does with its Prime Vision, but looking at what kinds of elements, analytics elements, that we could include in an, you know, in an automated, low friction fashion, that could be a differentiator for a broadcast. So this conversation is certainly ongoing. Our team has lots of thoughts on
lots of ideas,
cool things that we could do. That, you know, so the fourth down is kind of like, fourth down bug is like the first, like, real sliver, but just, especially in the sports like NFL and NBA, when there's such good player tracking data and metrics, that's certainly an opportunity. And then just anytime we're talking about data and analytics, you know, you're talking sports betting and you're talking fantasy sports as opportunities as well. So it's really figuring out best ways to, like, marry all of that together and put it out there in a, you know, in a display that fans want to consume, that's not terribly overwhelming,
right?
But, you know, and then threading that needle, it's personalized. Like, I don't care about that guy's fantasy stats. Like, I'm worried about, you know, I've got this guy on my team. I want to know how he's doing.
Well, you mentioned the betting. It's obviously risen so much in the U.S. in the last few years, and it's that field by nature is intertwined with data, with analytics. How has that affected what you and the team are doing? Whether, I don't know, it's from a metric standpoint or more of a delivery slash display standpoint, how's the betting, the rise of sports betting affected what you're doing?
It certainly has in a number of ways. We've taken on a number of initiatives around sports betting. Seth Walder, who's our analytics writer for digital, if you read his pieces on ESPN.com, like, he's very heavily in the sports betting space. He has regular appearances on Daily Wager, getting into not just game spreads, but also player props in that nature. So he's himself has built models to help with player props and similar types of sports bets there. In terms of the rest of the team, we have a number of things. We started NBA. We have a cover probability model. So not just, chance to win the game, but, now it's your chance to cover the spread and whatever that spread might be. And also the chance to go over or under the total. And it's a live updating thing. We have it on right now. It just runs kind of internally, but we are working with the folks in our digital product team to hopefully make that a feature of a future game cast. And then as if that is successful, then picking up and doing it with the other sports as well.
You may have just answered this question, but anything else coming down the pike for ESPN Analytics that you can tease or tell people to look out for?
Absolutely. So we are just out with our women's college basketball power index. We had a model previously, but the data over the last few years, ESPN stats and analysis team over the past few years really did a great job shoring up, filling out the full NCAA Division I data for women. So we were able to go back and outfit a new model, just a better model than what we had before. So that has been rolling out over the past week or so. So expect to see that, in projections and so forth across our platforms. I mean, women's basketball, last year's tournament was exceptional and similar for this year. So really excited to be part of that, just the growth of that sport and be part of that storytelling. We are also working on a WNBA player metric. So looking for that to come out sometime this season. Envision it's going to be a live, dynamic metric updating throughout games, tells a lot of stories during, after, before games, season long. Nice. we're very excited about that as well.
What do you see from the public standpoint? What's a common misconception that you see about, any ESPN metric or just kind of the analytics that ESPN spits out in general?
It's both that it's just a bunch of computers, but also a bunch of biased people who,
East Coasters,
biased company. Yeah. Anytime it's Alabama's number one. Well, of course, Alabama's number one because ESPN wants Alabama to be in the playoffs.
Right.
So I can assure you that none of that is the case. we do not put our thumb on the scale, despite, what sometimes, it's tempting to, but yes, we never put our thumb on the scale to get the desired results. So yes, we're not part of some larger conspiracy to get certain teams into tournaments or selected to playoffs or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I gotcha. All right. Let's talk a little bit about kind of your career path. So you started officially in the research department. I guess should point out, you left the research department and I took your spot. So thank
you.
I took
my spot and my desk.
I did. I literally took your desk. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if we blame you for this or give credit for it, but either way, thank you for doing that and opening the ESPN door for me.
My pleasure.
So you left Stats and Info entirely to be a highlight supervisor. What did that role entail? And really, what did you learn in that year that helped you as you returned to Stats and Info shortly thereafter?
Well, it was it was a good experience. It was a different experience. Yeah. Glorified babysitting, dealing with the people who worked in screening at the time. There was not the same level of sports expertise required, or that I was used to, having come from the research department.
I took some of those phone calls, so yes. Familiar. Yes. So
there was, you know, and you're dealing with the folks who are generally pretty young, and this is their first job. So that was, you know, really an opportunity for me to get into like people management. That was the first time I'd ever supervised people and provided leadership and guidance to them. So from that standpoint, it was helpful. Also, it was great just from a production standpoint, to just see, you know, the other side of how TV gets made. You know, being a researcher, you know, I'd been in production trucks, I'd been in studio, you know, so you had some prism.
Yeah, you had a sense of it. Yeah.
You had a sense of it, but like, you know, you're still in your own little, little bubble and figure, you know, doing what you need to do. So it was very enlightening to see the other way and how, you know, highlights got on the air and just how different areas of the production happened. Because when I made that move, part of my thinking was like, oh, well, I'd like to be I'd like to be a sports center producer or something. I was dissuaded of that notion after that that year. It just wasn't going to be for me. But you know, not only did I learn a lot about different side of production, but I met a ton of new people, made a lot of great relationships that I, you know, have helped me throughout the years as I, you know, just kind of grown in my career in different spaces and, you know, just having a network of people kind of spread throughout the company has been.
Yeah. So kind of on that front, like you mentioned, you have a journalism background, you know, like me. So not, you know, whatever, what is now a traditional analytics type of background, because those things didn't exist really back when we were in school. How does that help you? The communications, the journalism, how does that help you now that you're in more of an analytical type of role?
I mean, what we do in analytics and just ESPN in general, like we're storytellers and just happens to be like a storyteller with data, with analytics. Mm-hmm. So it is just having kind of the journalism background, kind of the editorial chops to really help identify like what are the good stories, how are we telling the good stories, and then being able to communicate them effectively. Like, you know, communications, like I, you know, certainly went to school to do like PR and news writing and reporting. I do a lot of writing, a lot of emails, you know, presentations, you know, I do a lot of like PowerPoints, you know, and explaining our metrics and, you know, things to our internal teams and, you know, pitching stuff to our sales teams to take out to market. So, you know, being able to craft that narrative for whoever your audience is like extremely important and probably the biggest skill required for what I do on a daily basis.
Yeah. Now that you're in a leadership role in the analytics group, what do you look for when hiring somebody? I mean, there's kind of the technical side, there's the whatever, communication, soft skills, whatever you want to call it side. What are you looking for if you're hiring someone into this group on both those fronts?
Well, it shouldn't have to be said, but like really, like I need a like diehard sports fan. Because that goes so far in being, you know, we're producing content for sports fans. If you don't relate to that, then it's going to be really tough. And plus, like, you know, we work odd hours, you know, and if you're going to be paying, you know, if you got to be on like during NBA games at night or doing the Super Bowl or whatever, like you've got to really love it. Yep. So that is like first and foremost. So I wouldn't say that if somebody comes to me and they don't have it, like any sports in their background, that, you know, I wouldn't rule them out, but certainly get a lot of pause, and that you have to overcome that aspect of things.
Right.
But you know, really it's not just like, you know, certainly the experience is helpful. Sports background is helpful. It's being able to be a storyteller yourself, like, you know, be able to, to communicate and translate the work that you're doing. Being a team player, being versatile, we are a small team. So if we have, one flat tire, it's going to hurt. So we want to, have people who are able to support each other, who are able to flex, like, hey, basketball might not be your favorite sport, but you know what? I kind of need you to work on this basketball thing and lend your expertise to that. That type of thing is helpful as well. So those are the biggest criteria on top of just being able to code and model and engineer and all the other wonderful things that the people on the team.
All right, let's wrap things up with our playing favorite segment where we go through a number of your favorites, get to know you a little. What is your favorite number and why?
I don't know if I have a favorite number. I don't have a favorite number. I guess when I played hockey back, when I played competitive sports, mm-hmm. I was number 15. So okay. we can go with 15, which was good my enough. Dad's number when he played hockey.
There you go. It's a nice reason. Favorite athlete for you as a kid?
All right. So I had two, and maybe, my number probably should have been four. Two, my first, I call them sports loves, Paul Molitor. Mm-hmm. Played for the Brewers, Hall of Famer, just, loved him. And baseball was my first true love in sports. And then Brett Favre was my, obviously we had Favre, we had Rodgers in Green Bay. I would always say that Brett Favre is my quarterback. Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback of my team.
I got you. Yeah. You're a big Disney World aficionado. I know, having run things by you in the past. Favorite ride at Disney World? We'll stick to the Orlando parks at least.
It's funny. My son asks me this all the time. My six-year-old asks me, what's your favorite ride? It's the same answer that I told you 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. It is right now. It is Cosmic Rewind, which is the Guardians of the Galaxy ride at Epcot. It is the most intense, immersive ride experience you can ever imagine.
All right, I'll have to hit it up when we get back there sometime. Do you have a favorite event that you've covered at ESPN?
I went to a couple of NFL drafts. Which was very cool. Went to a couple Super Bowls, which was also a fun event. Yeah, I'd say among those things.
Yeah. Through all this, favorite "How did I get here?" moment, where you find yourself somewhere, you're like, "What in the world is going on? How did my career lead me to this cool point?"
Yes, and actually, Brett Favre is part of
all right.
Of that. 2007, I was on the road doing Monday Night Countdown, and we were in Denver, and part of our countdown crew at the time was Emmett Smith, and they knew I was a huge Packer fan, and obviously Emmett and I would jaw back and forth because he would get the in his career he got the better part of the Packers, but he's good guy. And when, throughout the season, he was like, all right, he's like, when we go to Denver, when the Packers are there, he's like, I'm going to introduce you to Brett Favre. All right. I'm like, I'm going to hold you to that. So lo and behold, we were out in Denver. We did our hit. And then Emmett was just like, all right, let's go. So went on the field before the game, walked over and he introduced me. And so I chatted with Favre for a little bit, which was awesome. And then Jay Cutler came in, and I was like, just Jay, just go away. This is my time now.
Brett and I are talking here.
Yeah, Brett and I are talking. So the researcher in me too, at the same time, was just like, this is amazing. I got introduced to the all-time leading passer by the all-time leading rusher.
That's pretty good. Love it.
Just to cap off that night, so the Packers ended up winning the game in overtime. Favre threw an 82-yard touchdown pass to Greg Jennings. Greg Jennings came to the set after the game because, it was the hero of the game.
Yep.
And then Stu Scott and Emmett Smith, God bless them, named me on air. He called it Allison's Packers when they were doing
there
that.
There you go.
And I was just like, that's when I was just like, wow. I'm like,
it's a walk-off.
This is amazing.
So then you left research because where else are you going to go after that, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's just all been downhill from
that. All right. It's a good story to end with. Allison Laux, Director of Business Development and Innovation at ESPN. Thanks for joining us here on Expected Value.
Thank you very much, Paul. It's been a pleasure.
Back in the True Media Studios, I'm Paul Carr. Thanks again to Allison Laux for joining us on the show. You can check out her team's work at ESPN.com/analytics. I'm joined now by producer Blake Arney. Blake, what did you take away from the conversation with Allison?
Yeah, it was a great conversation. I think one thing that was really interesting to me is obviously analytics have changed a lot, especially, you know, in the time that since you got to ESPN, even till now, you know, there's been a major growth and a lot more desire from fans and from people watching the broadcasts for those analytics. But as they've changed, you know, you talked about QBR with her and how it's much better than passer rating, but how they kind of had to prove that to people and really push for QBR to be used and explain why it was so much better.
Yeah, it was. I was at ESPN at the time when QBR was developed. I wasn't on the team that developed it, but I was in research, the sister department. And so our task was to take it and sell it to television. So we had to sell it to producers, to anchors. So there's a lot of explaining where, you know, I don't have to know the nitty gritty of how the algorithm is calculating something, but I need to know what is going into it. It just took time, you know, being able to explain. The nice thing about the metric is it's pretty intuitive. So, you know, this quarterback's QBR is much better than his passer rating because of what he's doing with his legs. You know, Michael Vick, this was, I think it was 2011. Michael Vick was the classic example at the time of, you know, his passer rating wasn't great, but he was toward the top of QBR because he's obviously very dangerous with his legs. Figuring out from a research standpoint, why is this different? Why is it better? And being able to explain that to people, it was a lot of fun. It was a challenge. Because you're just changing, I'm just like any analytics type thing, you're changing the way people think or trying to help them out. And it just took time, but it was a lot of fun to try and figure out, all right, what does this mean? How are we going to use this on TV or digital or wherever it was?
Yeah, and people with analytics, I feel like, are always, they question it when they see new, new metrics and new stuff like that. So,
yeah,
you know, QBR, like you said, it seemed like it picked up relatively quickly because people realized, okay, yeah, you know, a guy like Michael Vick, he is a good quarterback, but his passer rating may not be, you know, reflecting right. That exactly. Obviously, something like when he runs the ball and you know, picks up so many yards doing that. Of course, his QBR should be higher because he is a great quarterback.
Right. Yeah. But people don't realize from the outside, I didn't realize this from the outside, so much work goes into these metrics. You know, this is not you and I are going to sit down and talk for an hour and then we're going to put some numbers on TV or publish them in the New York Times or, you know, use them as an MLB front office or something. It takes a lot. And especially when it's public, I would say we don't mind if people try to poke holes in it, cause that's good. You know, I always say if I'm tweeting out some stat or something and someone questions it, like, sure, show me I'm wrong and I'm willing to adjust on things. But there's that's part of the process, you know, is thinking through all these problems. So it's ESPN or 538 or the Times or PFF or whatever. The metrics aren't just made up. There's teams of people who often spend months, maybe years trying to put them together. So the metrics aren't necessarily perfect, but these lazy criticisms that someone thinks of in 10 seconds probably have been thought through. There's always just more to it than people think, I think, from the outside, which is a good thing to, that's obviously why you have the good people making the metrics like Allison's team.
Yeah, I was just having that conversation with someone about expected goals in soccer, how it's very similar where there's so much and so many, you know, nuanced things that go into it. Like, where are the defenders in this situation? And you know, obviously, like, the whole point is to be how likely is this player to score? But you have to take into account, is he right-footed? Is he left-footed? Is it on his head? Is it, you know, all those little things about the situation. Where's the goalkeeper in the situation?
Yep.
And you only have so many experiences to draw from. And so it's just a very intricate thing that, like you said, you have to really, I mean, obviously people are going to always try and poke holes in it and people are going to think of little things here and there to say that are incorrect. But it's like these people have sat down to try and get it right, and every year after year after year it's getting better because we have more information to draw from. It's actually a very similar situation to this.
Yeah, there's always going to be variables that don't go into an expected goals formula just because there's so many just very distinct specific situations. And I think another thing to stress is a metric doesn't have to be perfect. Expected goals is not a perfect metric by any stretch. I don't think anybody would tell you that. But it's much better than shots. It's much better than shots on goal or goals. You know, it's an improvement. You know, it's kind of up the ladder, making things a little bit better. So that's something to keep in mind. You know, some metrics obviously need to be closer to, you know, perfect or accurate or whatever you want to say than others. But just having something is often better than what you had before. And that's an important thing to keep in mind too. So, all right. Thanks, Blake. Thanks one final time to Allison Lax for joining us on the show. We have several other episodes with ESPN Stats and Info people in the archives, including Jeff Bennett, who founded the analytics team back in 2011. Brian Burke, whom Allison mentioned, is largely responsible for many of ESPN's NFL football metrics. Lauren Poe, a developer on Allison's team. You can find all those in the archives. While you're there, please subscribe, rate, review the show. Leave us some kind words if you're so inclined. We always appreciate that and any other sharing you can do. We'll be back in a couple weeks with another episode. Until then, on behalf of producer Blake Arney and all of us at True Media, I'm Paul Carr. Thank you for listening to Expected Value, the podcast that goes inside the sports analytics world.